Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
Zoe, how are you?
What's like a scary Halloween music? Like gum, gum, gum.
No,
it's fine. I feel like everybody feels the same way. Is that it doesn't feel the same. You know, like I love Christmas. I love this period. And it's just tricky, isn't it? Everyone's in their different tiers. You know, we're not sure what we can and can't do. People are telling us off for like not abiding by the rules, but no one's really sure what the rules are. And it's just I think every day is a bit of a drag at the minute.
Yeah,
not meaning to sound like
a
Moni Myrtle. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Do you know what? Right, round near where I live, everybody's making a real effort with like Christmas lights and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's like, you know, one of those, like, right, come on, we really need to get in the festive spirit. Like, come on, let's just throw everything at it, but nothing seems to be sticking. It's like, come on, put some more fairy lights up. That'll do it. That'll get us in the mood. But it doesn't.
And you know what? You're so right, because it's kind of like that feeling. You know, when you're... It's like enforced fun on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
You know, when everyone's like, we must have the best night ever. It's New Year's Eve. And then it's always a bit like, oh, it wasn't as good as we thought it would.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I'm fine. As long as we can see some family members and, you know, we're going to get to see each other next week, which I'm really looking forward to. And just, things
actually,
like
do you know
that.
What? You know what? I've got a bone to pick with you.
Oh, no. I know what you're going to say.
I don't think you do. Right. Have you turned off your voicemail? Because whoever is the person on the end of your phone when it rings out, it's really rude. She goes, I'm sure it used to be like, oh, hi, it's Zoe's phone. And that used to be her voice. So that was really nice. And then today I phoned you and it was literally like, sorry, no one's here. Bye. I was like,
Oh my God, that is so weird.
Someone
hacked my phone. Are you sure you weren't phoning your mum or someone?
I don't know, but I thought I'd tell you because I was not, you know, I'm used to hearing like, oh, hi, it's Zoe's phone.
Yeah.
It was this really grumpy woman going, bye, basically pissed off. Like,
that's my internal monologue that's going on at the minute.
Is that where you're at?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I thought you were going to tell me because those of you that are listening that don't know, we're calling it bag gate, but basically, Georgia and I picked two little new handbags and they both got sent to my address. And basically, I've been wearing Georgia's because it's actually nicer. She clocked it in a photo the other day and was like, what is this? I was like, anyway, I'll give it back to you next week.
Oh, I'm sure that, you know, sort of secondhand bag. Okay, no, I'm joking. It's always better when it's been worn in, isn't it?
Exactly.
Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, of course it was. This week's chat is so lovely because Georgia and I love to discuss food. We like to talk about recipes, you know, my mistakes, Georgia's flying successes, and this whole podcast is about nutrition and kids nutrition.
Yeah, it is, and it's really interesting as well because I think there is quite a lot of things that we brought up which we haven't discussed before. That I mean, so many of us do. Like for me, it's like Axel and his breakfast. It's one of those things I've just put to the back of my mind, thinking, you know, I'll be fine, it'll be fine. And then the guests hit us with some scary stats, and now I'm thinking, I should probably switch up that Nutella breakfast.
Yeah, and interesting that you say that because another topic that we covered was, you know, letting your kids watch telly whilst eating and Charlotte's response to that, because that is a bad habit that we've got into during lockdown. You know, they always used to sit at the breakfast breakfast bar for all of their meals. And then suddenly I was just like, you know, when you just kind of need a bit of a break from them. Yeah. So you're like, oh, go in the playroom and watch it in front of the telly. But what she said about it was that actually children that sit in front of telly to eat their food either have a habit of overeating or undereating because they're distracted. And it was getting so much harder for me to feed Kit. So since the podcast, 10 days ago, they're now eating all of their meals up at the breakfast bar, and I'm having so much more success and I feel better.
Do you know what? I've got something funny to tell you about the TV thing. So you guys will hear it obviously in the interview, but the kids don't watch the TV like when they're having dinner. But this weekend, Gigi was staying with my mum and James was away because we were having building work done. And on Saturday, Axel and I had a lovely day, the two of us. Like, it was so nice. We went to see Santa. Like, it was just lovely. You know, when it's just the two of you, I feel like it's so much easier.
Of course it is.
And then he was sitting watching TV when we got back. And I said, oh, do you want to sit and eat your pasta? Like, we'll sit next to each other and we'll watch TV and eat it. And he went to me, this is my favourite day of the year. And I was like, oh, me too. Oh, I've had such a nice day as well, Axel. And he went, eating and watching the TV. So not that he had, you know, spent the last 24 hours, we'd had a movie night, we'd slept in the same bed, we'd, you know, been to see Santa. No, none of that.
No.
The highlight of his year was watching the TV and eating a bowl of pasta.
That's classic. So, and that's just kids, isn't it? It's absolutely, you can go to the ends of the earth, but really they just want to sit down, watch The Lion King and eat a spag bol.
Absolutely.
So come on then, G, let's get into the chat. Who are we talking to today?
Today we have got Charlotte Sterling Reed, who is a baby and child nutritionist.
So today's guest, somebody who knows all about nutrition. She has worked with Joe Wicks on his Wean in 15 book. She's a mum of two herself, a registered nutritionist, just an all-round legend, basically, when it comes to, you know, the right foods to be eating, what we should be feeding our children, and coming up with some fantastic ideas to really mix things up. We all know how difficult it is to get it right. Today, we are chatting to Charlotte Sterling Reed. Welcome!
Yay! Thank you so much. What a lovely intro, and thanks for having me on.
Well, listen, welcome. It's really great to have you on. I think Georgia and I have been really kind of vocal about the ups and downs, the highs and lows of weaning our kids. So for people that kind of don't know about you, what you're about and your sort of background, can you just fill us in a little bit on your work and what you do?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Charlotte Sterling Reed and I'm the baby and child nutritionist. And I guess my aim with everything that I do, and especially since working with Joe, my profile on social media has been boosted quite a lot. But my aim is really just to give parents confidence with feeding their children. So that's whether they are weaning age, whether they are older toddlers, or whether they're teenagers. It really is just about trying to offer parents that confidence. And I just think it's so important to support parents with this journey, because often some people will say, oh, it's easy, why do you need to tell people about what to feed their kids? But actually, there's so much confusion at the moment. And so for me, it's about trying to help parents to get it right, but also to help them to make it really simple and not make it overcomplicated.
Yeah, of course. So what, what sort of do the majority of parents come to you asking? Like, what are they looking for? What sort of advice are they looking for?
Well, mainly definitely around weaning. And the reason for that is because I love weaning. I talk about weaning all the time. So I have lots and lots of parents who will come to me and say, how do I even start? You know, what food do I start with? Where do I begin? Then there's also the other side of things, which is the kind of fussy eating, which is an inevitable part of feeding children, in my experience. Mm-hmm. And the fact that lots of parents will come and say, oh, my little one ate so well and now they're not eating at all. What can I do, essentially? So that's the other side of the coin. And I deal with most of those kind of questions every single day, without a doubt. And I love talking about it and I love helping parents with it. And so that's what I try and do on my social platform and in all of the other work that I do.
I'm so glad that you're kind of beating that drum, because for me, mum of two, mum of three, I didn't wean Isla, but with the other two, I found it really difficult. I didn't think that there was enough information out there. And I also didn't think there was enough support, because to be honest with you, I'm not a foodie. I'm not that interested in food. I don't really know how to cook. I'd rather drink a glass of wine and chat to somebody than like spend an hour in the kitchen being like, oh, look at this beautiful lasagna that I've just rustled up. It's like, that's not me, right? So when it came to weaning the kids, I was a bit like, oh shit, the 5 months part has come. And now what do I do?
Do you know what? So common. I always say weaning comes at a time when you feel like you've nailed everything else. You know, you've got 6 months, you've got a routine going on. Baby might start to be a bit of a better sleeper. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're like, I've got to feed them food now. Where do I even start? What do I feed them? How much do I feed them? What time of day do I feed them? What about allergens? You know, there's just so many questions. So I think a lot of parents who aren't necessarily natural foodies do have those questions, definitely. And even parents who are foodies, you know, even parents who love their food, they still are going, okay, where do I start? Do I still give them my gourmet chicken with, you know, seasoning or what, you know? So I think this end of the spectrum need a little bit of help.
Yeah. So where do you, you know, suggest starting? And do you suggest purees or do you suggest baby led or a mixture? What, you know, what advice do you give?
So there's so much that you can read online and it is often so much misinformation and it just goes to make parents more confused. And, you know, I'm a big advocate of the concept of doing a best of both approach. Why do we need to say just purees or just baby-led weaning when actually the world isn't black and white? The world isn't one or the other. Some kids take to purees brilliantly and other kids will go, oh yes, finger foods, feeding myself, I'm on that. So there is no reason why we can't combine the two methods so that children are sometimes fed from the spoon but also given lots of opportunity to feed themselves and cut food and put it in their mouth by themselves. There is, you know, if you go onto some of the kind of baby-led weaning groups, there's a lot of misinformation there as well, where parents or people will say, if you do that, you'll confuse children. But there is no evidence for this whatsoever. And for years and years, we've been recommending kind of purees alongside finger foods. And for me, it's just a really nice, gentle, gradual approach. And it tends to work really well for children because then they can follow their own lead.
Yeah.
Do children inherently not like certain food groups or tastes? Because this science bit really fascinates me.
Well, yes, interesting you say that. That's kind of the concept around why what I recommend when it comes to weaning. Children, babies are born with a preference for sweeter foods. And that makes sense because in nature, sweeter foods tend to be more nutrient rich. So if you think about fruits and veggies, sweeter fruits and veggies tend to be pretty nutrient rich and they also tend to be pretty safe foods. So children are born to like sweet foods, sweeter taste. They're actually a little bit wary of things like bitter, savoury and some of those umami tastes. So actually what we need to do when we start feeding our babies is help them to learn that those tastes are okay. You know, we need to help encourage them to accept and become familiar with those very, very new tastes that they've never had before in order for them to like and accept them. Because breast milk and formula milk is quite sweet. So they'll readily accept all those sweeter tastes. And if you give them some apple to start with, they're likely to gobble it up and really enjoy it. But that, you know, it doesn't necessarily work the same for broccoli. So it's more of a, they need to learn to accept foods that are savoury, like broccoli, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that because when I was weaning my first Axel, I like read the books and I sort of followed. Yeah. I followed a little bit of a plan, like, oh, introduce this. But a couple of like weeks in, I was thinking, they're basically telling me to mix everything with pear. Like,
yes,
you know, mix potato with pear or give sweet potato or mix. And it seemed like everything was really sweet. And I guess is that why our children like sugar so much?
Well, as I said, they're kind of born preferring sweeter food. So it's not necessarily that that causes it. It's just that kind of reinforces that enjoyment and love and acceptance of sugar and sweetness, which is fine. But actually, we really want children to explore much more of a variety of foods. And I have to say, when I started and I trained in the NHS, our weaning workshops, we would always talk about fruit and vegetables together. And we would say, you know, offer some apple puree is a good idea and pear puree. And it was only after a lot of research around offering vegetables first as part of the weaning journey that we, you know, a lot of us started to change our advice. And it's not to say that fruit is bad or that fruit shouldn't be offered to children. It's just that actually trying to have more of a encourage more of a savory palate to start with can help to accept more savoury foods later on. So right. It's not to say that sugar, the sweet fruits will encourage only a liking for those, but actually it's just not allowing them to explore anything new. So you're right, there's so much out there where, you know, you kick off weaning with apple puree and pear puree and sweet potato and sweet carrots, you know, but there's so much more than just those tastes. And I'm a massive advocate of helping babies from the very first taste to explore new.
There is so much that I'm like bursting with questions here, because this subject I find fascinating, absolutely fascinating, because Georgia was talking about, you know, her weaning journey with Axel. Georgia is a fantastic cook, and actually she's nailed it. Like, her kids eat, you know, when I see her on stories, they're like eating risotto with, you know, cherry tomatoes and like whatever else she's putting it. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, like mine would launch it on the floor straight away and then dance around it. So I think it's really interesting how some parents definitely have different journeys. And actually there is quite a lot of anxiety around food, which is a weird thing to say, because, you know, food is one of the most natural things that we can do.
Absolutely.
But I think we feel the pressure as parents to try and get it right. And there will always be another baby or another toddler or another five-year-old that's like consuming, you know, the risottos that kind of make us think, oh God, they're having fish fingers again. Like, it's a tricky journey, isn't it? And especially in those first sort of 6 months of weaning.
It's so tricky. Oh my God, I love everything you just said there, is exactly why I do what I do. Everything that you said. First of all, yes, parents are always wanting to get it right. And although I kind of recommend, you know, certain, you know, starting with vegetables and things like that, the thing that I always try and emphasize to the parents who follow me or who come on my webinars is, it you know, getting it right isn't an option necessarily. Feeding children is not going to be perfect. It's not linear. It's always going to have ups and downs and drops. And you can only do the best you can do. You know, when it comes to feeding your children, I try and guide parents with the advice, but it is really difficult because the comparisons, the focus on trying to make it perfect is just too difficult for parents. And I always try and emphasize that's not going to happen. It's not going to be perfect, but you know what? Try this, and, you know, hopefully you'll get there. So yeah, I really, really feel everything that you're saying right now.
And what do you, thank you, Charlotte, thank you, because I feel it too. But like, I've got two amazing eaters and one child that Kit, who just, he's basically written off two food groups, fruit and vegetables.
Okay.
He just will not touch them. And in fact, ever since he was a baby, so I did a combination lead weaning. So I was doing the purees because I was a bit anxious about how much food he was getting in. And then I would do, you know, lovely like steamed broccoli, steamed carrots, all that on the you know, we're good eaters at home. We really are. And he just, brilliant. From the word go, he just got the broccoli and he would just put it on the floor, launch it on the floor, carrots on the floor. No, he just did. I think he probably tried it once and then was like, I'm not doing it. And they say, don't they, you have to keep, you know, 10 times I think a child can say no, and then on the 11th time they'll pick it up. It's been like a 1 million and 11 times. And it's, I have to hide the vegetables in everything. So is there going to be a point where he turns around and starts eating vegetables, or is he never going to eat them, Charlotte?
The ultimate question. To be honest, it's very difficult to say. Most children, you know, given the right kind of scenario and context, but, you know, it sounds like you've done a lot of that already, but given the right scenario, context, environment, will eventually start eating those vegetables and those foods. On the other hand, some won't. You know, there are so many adults who I see now who are like, nope, don't eat any fruit and veg, nope, don't like it. Do you know what? The human body is quite miraculous. It really will cope, and it will utilize as many of the nutrients from the foods that you give it that it can. So I would say try not to worry too much. Keep doing everything that you're doing, but you might find eventually he starts eating. There might be another influence that comes into his life later on that encourages him to eat those vegetables. You just don't know. And there is this, you know, part of it is genetic as well. There are some children who are kind of super tasters who will really taste those flavours and not like them. And genetically, some children are more likely to be fussy than others as well. But everything you're doing sounds right. So, you know, get the children involved, eat together. But one really key thing that parents often don't pick up on is that kind of not putting the pressure on to eat it. The more that we pressure children to try and eat it, so the more you say, come on, just have that one bit of broccoli, or maybe push a bit of their plate and say, just eat this half, or you know, focus on them not eating it, the more likely that will be to carry on. So there probably are still things that you could do sometimes with some children, they are stubborn and there is just nothing you can do and you cannot force them to eat. So you just have to make the most of the rest of their diet where you can.
It's really interesting that you say about putting the pressure on, because we started eating all together as a family at the beginning of lockdown, so back in March, because we were both home at the same time, and you know, that's just how, you know, that's what we did. And we found it really tense at the start because my husband would get frustrated with Axel, my eldest, taking too long to eat. And he'd be like, come on, hurry up. And Axel went from being a really great eater to actually not really liking dinner time. And so we had to be very careful to kind of leave that out and just let him get on with it. And we've come full circle again. But we did really notice that that pressure really did put him off his food. Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because I guess if someone's going to you, come on, eat, you fit. That's the last thing you're going to do.
It must be awful.
Yeah, but we do it, don't we? Because we want them. We want to get the goodness into them. So we're like, come on, like you'll trick them into eating. Like especially with babies, you'll be like, oh, you know, singing a song and then shoving the spoon in their mouths.
Oh, do you remember I used to tickle Luna under the armpits? The most stressful thing. So she used to open her mouth and then I used to shove a spoon in her mouth at that.
It's
what is wrong with me?
We all do it. Like we all do it. And you know, Axel's 4 years old and at school, and I'm still like, come on, eat your dinner, come on, hurry up.
It's almost innate, because I always say, you know, as parents, what we want is we want our children to eat, and we want them to eat this delicious food that we know is really good for them and that we've just spent ages making. And so as a parent, it's almost, you almost have to fight your natural instincts when it comes to some of these things around feeding, because the automatic reaction is to pressure them to get them to eat the food so that they've got that goodness. But actually that honestly can really have the opposite, sometimes a really damaging effect on their eating behavior and their kind of fussiness. It's so key to take that pressure off. And that's one of the things that I would say I kind of spiel out all the time to parents, but it's very, very hard concept to actually do and get. Exactly what you just said, yourself in their position. If you've got someone with a spoon at your mouth going, just eat up, come on, just try this last bit, to kind of force a spoon into your mouth, or like you say, distracting you, going, look over there, and then shoves a spoon in your mouth, you know, that you wouldn't like that. And you know, if you've got someone standing over you at mealtime going, just eat that bit, again, at a meal, you would not be wanting to eat it, and you'd be reluctant to kind of come back to that meal place every time. So I do always say, parents, take a step back, have a look at that mealtime environment. If it's a pressure cooker environment, your child is not going to want to be there, and they're not going to want to eat that food either.
So interesting that you say everything you say. I'm like, I do that. Oh God, I do that. And I think it's just, I think if you've got one fussy eater, Kit has had terrible problems with his reflux. I've spoken about it quite a lot. So for ages, he was on omeprazole and he was on Neocate, and he wouldn't eat anything that was any form, you know, the acidity in his stomach was so bad. He was like foaming at the mouth for a long time. So I think that inherently sort of stems from that period. I mean, he's very, very healthy, and we obviously managed to get the fruit and veg in his porridge and, you know, the spag bowls and things like that. But yeah, I guess it's about, like you said, it's about taking that step back, isn't it? And if they don't eat their food, at what point do you go, okay, I'm just going to give him hummus and breadsticks for dinner? Like, do we supplement food for favourite foods if they don't eat their dinners? What do you think?
So that's a really good question as well. And it depends quite a lot on the context, like what's happening, what's being eaten during the rest of the day, what foods are being refused. Is it every single mealtime? Like there's so many questions that come with that. But ultimately, it's not ideal to offer an alternative. So if you've got your normal meal and you as a family are eating a meal and your little one's having something completely separate, that's just going to reinforce that behaviour. And it's going to reinforce that it's okay for you to not eat these foods ever. So a better thing to do would be to try and give them some foods on their plate that they will accept and they will like, but try and always keep offering some of the kind of rejected foods as well, because you want to keep offering it so they continue to be familiar. You know, not making a fuss, just putting it on their plate, and if they don't eat it, that's fine, and letting them know that that's fine, but just constantly keeping it there. And you mentioned about hiding foods. Now, Hiding foods is okay as long as your little ones are also exposed to the foods in their whole form too. So if you're making a bolognese and you're blending some lentils into the bolognese, for example, then, you know, trying to have some lentils on the side that are visible so that they always see them, because seeing food can help with familiarity. And we know from research that being familiar with something is more likely to lead to an acceptance of it. So whereas hiding foods in certain foods is okay, because as you said, you're kind of supplementing that meal with the nutrients that are needed, still try and make it visual. So just to kind of answer your question properly, I would say don't offer an alternative. Don't just give up and go, okay, that's fine, it will just be breadsticks and hummus, you know, every evening. Try and keep offering, you know, a variety, but do, you know, you can get in there some of those safe foods, in inverted commas, that you know they will eat, so yes, that they're not going to bed hungry, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's a bit of a running joke at the moment in our house. So every evening Axel gets back from school, and it is only Monday to Friday that he does it. He's tired and he's cross and whatever. And I'll put dinner on the table and he go, I don't like that. And he hasn't even looked at it.
He doesn't even
know what it is. And now, I mean, it used to really wind me up, but now I just laugh. And then I look around and 2 minutes later, he's eating it and finishes.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. He's four. He's just started school. Okay. He's really tired. And, it's a lot. Yeah. But so dinner time, we do all eat the same thing. And it's great. And I'm really happy with it. But breakfast time is a whole different story. I eat boiled eggs in the morning. My husband eats avocado on toast. Gigi eats smoked salmon and avocado. No bread, won't touch bread. She just licks whatever toppings on the bread off. And Axel has a croissant, Nutella bagel. Basically, such a sweet breakfast.
Right. Every morning, G.
Not every morning. He would, absolutely, if he was allowed to. If I give him the choice, he would always go for like chocolate spread on a bagel or chocolate spread on a croissant. Sometimes he has porridge. He wants to put chocolate in it.
of course he does. It's the best.
Savory breakfast, I really, really struggle with him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think breakfast necessarily have to be completely savory. I'm, again, when it comes to breakfast time, I always try and encourage people to really vary it up right from the start, because it's so easy to get stuck on one breakfast that it's like that's what you have every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know. So try and vary that breakfast up so that there's something different coming, so that they don't always expect the same thing, because then it can get a bit habitual. There was some research recently done by Whole Earth that looked at breakfast, and they actually found that about 97% of proportion of children had 97% of their free sugar intakes in the morning just with their breakfast.
That's
like 7 teaspoons of sugar basically with their breakfast in the morning. And it is because of things like, you know, sugary spreads, sometimes sugary cereals, sometimes having, you know, a big glass of fruit juice with the meal. So all of these things can add up and encourage kind of excess sugar intake in the morning, which isn't ideal when you're kind of sending them off to school and they've already had their full day's quota of free sugars. So I know it is really difficult, but I always try and encourage to vary those breakfasts up as much as you can. You know, one of my most popular breakfast for babies is the carrot cake porridge, which is basically carrots grated into porridge. And it works an absolute treat, but, you know, you're not necessarily going to get older children who are used to having a chocolate croissant for breakfast to eat that. it is challenging. And it sounds like all the rest of your family having really, you know, good varied breakfast, like your eggs, your kind of salmon and your avocado on toast. It's just difficult in the morning, isn't it? Because you often have less time and patience to do that role modelling and get everyone eating similar things.
So when you say variety in your breakfasts, You might not know this. Kit's got an egg allergy, so that takes out egg for us. So he has porridge or Weetabix. The girls will have like dippy soldiers, eggy bread, fruit. The girls I'm not even worried about. But how would I mix up? What would be more kind of breakfast ideas that would be good for people to hear?
So, for example, you know, you could do some egg-free pancakes. Pancakes are always such a winner in my house. They're always like a Friday or Saturday treat when we're eating together. But, and you can top pancakes with so many different things. So you can top pancakes with like mushrooms and tomatoes and spinach, or you can top them with, you know, frozen fruits with a dollop of yogurt, for example. But yeah. So pancakes, any of the kind of cereals, the low sugar cereals, you know, like the wheat biscuit type things. And I'm trying to think of what others now.
Rice Krispies.
Cocoa Pops, firm favourite.
What are Rice Krispies? Are they bad for you?
So they're fairly high in salt, but they're not, I don't think they contain much sugar. I haven't looked at the pack for ages because there have been quite a lot of changes made around breakfast cereals, and they often are now lower in sugar and in salt. And I think they're medium in salt, so they're not actually a bad option, but what I would suggest is maybe adding stuff with them. So
banana,
for example,
flaxseed.
Have your, exactly, add a banana, add a piece of fruit, add something alongside them. But yeah, those cereals and porridge, you can also change up what you're offering in the porridge. You know, yeah, I love to stir a tablespoon of peanut butter in, or sprinkle some chia seeds in, for example, or, you know, and add a handful of berries or frozen fruits or whatever you've kind of got lurking in your fridge. So you can vary the type of porridge you offer. It is more difficult without eggs. But even, like you said, avocado on smashed on toast as well, that's a brilliant option.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after the short break.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We all know how a Christmas carol begins, but you've never heard it like this. Marley was dead to begin with. Dead as a f***ing doornail. Now, I don't know why a doornail. They've never had any life to begin with. But bottom line, Marley is dead.
A Christmas Carol, The Rude Retelling, read by Brian Harvey. Listen to the uncensored version, out now. Find it wherever you found this podcast or go to podfollow.com/Scrooge.
Buff humbug.
So welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Where were we? It's really hard to know, isn't it? It's I really don't understand. I still don't really understand why there isn't more conversations around it and more kind of education for parents. Because I definitely, as we've said, I sit in that bracket. I do find it difficult to come up with original ideas because I reckon I'm quite a habitual eater. Georgia, are you?
Do you know what? I, like Zoe said, like I love cooking. So I don't really eat the same things like all of the time. So I do switch it up, but I do find it trickier with the kids. Like before kids, James and I definitely had a lot of different dinners, whereas now you sometimes think, oh, shall I make that and it's not going to go down well, or shall I just make spaghetti bolognese? And then I usually think, I'll just make spaghetti bolognese.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so
I know
much
it's
easier.
Going to go down well. Yeah.
And you know what? You know, I don't want to put pressure on parents to make them feel like they have to vary everything all the time. You know, it's not the case. And let's be honest, like life, we need to be realistic in life. We're not all going to be cooking a different meal every single day. But it's more just like making sure that your children are exposed to a variety. Yeah. So they're always seeing a variety of different foods, because that can stop them kind of narrowing their food choices down to just those few certain meals or certain foods. But as I say, you know, life sometimes gets in the way, and it's not to say that every single mealtime you need to be varying it up all the time. And to be honest, my son has porridge the majority of the time. And especially since lockdown, where he was at home a lot more, I was like, porridge.
Porridge again.
Yeah. But I do try and vary what I add to that porridge so that it is changed up a little bit. But, you know, I'm a mum of two and I work, you know, most hours. And so I know that being realistic is also important. And it's just about maybe kind of thinking ahead, planning ahead. And it definitely when you throw things like allergies into the mix, it makes it even more complicated. But actually, we're really lucky that in this day and age, there are so many dairy-free kind of recipes online and lots of advice. So I work with Allergy UK as well. They have like an allergy weaning booklet, which has all these different recipes in as well, which basically have none of the allergens in them. Oh, and that's really fantastic too. So there's a lot of resources for you, but it just kind of takes that maybe that extra bit of time to go and look for them.
Yeah. Do you know one thing I really struggle with is healthy, non-sugary snacks?
Yes.
I don't have time to like make loads of snacks throughout the day. And quite often I'll have, you know, some of those organics bars in my bag. I mean, I don't know how great they are. I'm not sure. I haven't really looked at the label. But you know, those kind of things I always have to hand. But I am aware that like there's probably not that much flavor always in them. And I would quite like some other ideas.
Yes, same.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, snacks are always a challenge. And, you know, if you can make those kind of muffins and flapjacks at home, which are low sugar, then brilliant. And you can freeze them, take them with you. So that's what I sometimes do for my son. But, you know, you do always need the other healthy options. And you've already mentioned things like breadsticks and hummus, which is a, you know, brilliant option. That's always a really good kind of go-to choice. But, you know, for people who do have it, it depends. If you're at home, then things like a small piece of toast with some beans on it might work. Or, for example, crackers, oat cakes spread with no added sugar peanut butter, like the Whole Earth, no added sugar peanut butter that they do. And, you know, like I say, what I try and encourage people to think of when it comes to meal times is think about snacks as mini meals. So we want to try and include a carbohydrate, a fruit or vegetable, and ideally some kind of protein in that. Just think about what you would normally offer in your meals and try and kind of put that into snacks. But definitely crackers, oat cakes, rice cakes with some stuff spread on top of them, also a really, really good option. I'm trying to think now. I've got a whole dog which has about 100 snacks in it.
Oh, amazing.
A teaspoon of peanut butter is also really nice.
Oh, yes. So, and I tell you what I used to do for my son when he was really young is I used to take out with us a banana, and I used to take a banana and a dollop of peanut butter in a container, and I just used to mash it up, and that would kind of be his, like, when he was really young, that would be like our on-the-go meal for him. But yeah, peanut butter and a banana. I'm just trying to think now. My brain has gone completely blank. But
That's great.
That's great.
So not a chocolate hobnob then? So you say not...
That's ideal for you. Oh, I love chocolate hobnobs.
Oh, they're the best.
Oh, so do I.
So good.
Obviously, you know, we want our kids to grow up with a really good having a good relationship with food.
Yes,
and I think sometimes, I know I do, I'm trying not to demonize foods. So I'm trying not to be like, oh, don't have that chocolate bar. It's not good for you. Why don't you have this instead?
Yeah.
Because I want Axel, especially, you know, four, he understands now. I want him to know the foods that are good and kind of power his body and they're like fuel, but I equally don't want him to sort of think something's really bad, because obviously something you want something more that you can't have, don't you? So if I tell him he can't have sweets, he's just going to want them more.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you find that balance?
It is tricky. I'm not going to lie. It's really tricky. I think one of the first things is to, you know, don't overly restrict. So don't be like, we're never having those foods, you can never have them, because then absolutely, as you said, you kind of put them on a pedestal and you make those like the desirable food that are unattainable.
Yeah.
So first of all, you know, don't over restrict. Have them as part of their diet, but just try and keep them irregular rather than like every week or every day they're having these certain foods in their diet.
Yeah.
You can also talk to them about foods that they sometimes have more often and foods that they have less often. So just the same with everything else in life, you know, some things we do more often and some things we do less often. And it's the same with food. So rather than saying those foods are bad, you shouldn't be eating them, you can say, these are foods that we just have less often in our diet. And these are foods like fruits and vegetables that we have more often in our diet. I quite like that concept. It might sound vague, but it's a really easy way of trying to help explain to them without saying those foods are bad and you shouldn't be eating them because they're not good for you, which isn't ideal. And, you know, these foods are good and you should be eating them. And, you know, so often parents will say things like, oh, you can have your pudding, but you have to have eaten your broccoli.
I was just about to ask you that. I was like, can you bribe your children with a sweet dessert if they finish their food? Because I do it all the time and it works a treat.
But the thing is, it does work a treat. But I tell you what it also does. It puts foods on different hierarchies. It makes those puddings and those sweet foods the desirable ones. Now, you know, don't get me wrong. Parents have been doing this for years and years and lots of children haven't had any eating problems. But if you have got a child who's a bit more fussy and you're constantly telling them, you can't have this until you've eaten this, all it makes is that, you know, that kind of meal more undesirable. It makes them want to eat it less, and it makes the food that they're going to have afterwards even more appealing to them. So you're just changing the hierarchy of food system. So ideally, and it depends on the age of children, but, you know, for my son still now, I often give him his fruit and his savoury food all on one plate, and I just let him eat whichever bits of it, you know, that come. And it is quite a difficult concept for lots of people to gather, kind of having the pudding alongside with the meal rather than after the meal, and they certainly don't do it in nurseries and schools, but it really can help with that kind of not having foods as different. And you know, they are going to enjoy, you know, sweeter foods more quite often than savoury foods, but it's just about not overemphasizing that one food is better or more desirable than the other. It is a really difficult concept to get used to, because it's, you know, it's kind of fighting what's been going on in society forever and ever and ever. But the trouble is, we're living in a society now where those foods are so readily available, you know, the sweets and chocolates and biscuits and sugary cereals, they're so readily available that they're becoming so easy to access. And with children having more, you know, if we're encouraging children to desire them and want them even more, we could end up with even more of a problem on our hands than we have at the moment. So it's just about trying to, you know, have a realistic take on it, get children to see all foods as quite equal and none are better than the others. Just trying to, when you're at home, have your ratio of the kind of savoury, really healthful options higher than you would with your, you know, with the higher sugar options, for example.
Right.
So that interesting. Makes sense. Yeah, it really does. Yes. It's so interesting, Charlotte. Somebody said something to me the other day that I actually haven't started doing until recently, actually during lockdown, is that going to the supermarket with your kids can actually be quite educational for them. Letting them pick out the broccoli, like who can see the broccoli first? Letting them touch, you know, a courgette. Who knows where the tangerines are? Stuff like that. I just didn't do that. You know, I was like avoiding the supermarket with my kids because it was like, you know, some sort of horror scene. if I just get Luna on her own, and like if I'm just going down with Kit or whatever, I do find it helps him, because like the other day he licked an apple for the first time. Not in the supermarket, by the way. We'd actually bought it. He was just like looking all the other, oh, this one, this pink lady. But at home,
and like licked the banana in Guildford.
The Burpham in Guildford, don't go there. Don't eat any of the pink ladies. And like licked a banana when we were at home, out of the skin. And so just,
sending your son around the supermarket licking all the food.
Oh, fuck knows where I'm going with this question. No, but I think it was to do with the fact that we'd seen them and he'd touched them and he's felt them. And actually he's starting to slowly, like he put half a carrot baton in his mouth the other day and I was like, oh, he's going to eat it. And then he spat it out. But at least he put it in his mouth.
This is familiar. This is you building familiarity with those foods.
Right.
And you know, we said about that multiple exposures, you know, you said like 1 to 10 and then to 10 and voila, it doesn't happen like that. You know, some children are it takes a lot longer and a lot more exposures to those foods. But this, what you're doing is you're building his familiarity with them. And you can do that in any way. You can do that by reading a book, by writing a shopping list, by going to a supermarket, by getting them to look at food, by getting them to play with it. You know, it doesn't have to be eating it. That is perfect. Licking it, popping it in his mouth, brilliant. And I would say encourage that as much as you can. But, you know, we've always known that getting kids involved in food, and, you know, rather than just putting it on the table in front of them and being like, right, eat that, them involved in it, whether they're growing it at school or whether they're going to supermarket and writing lists with you and you're sending them off to find them and learn about them, it all helps. So you, what you're doing is brilliant. Absolutely carry that on.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Oh. You know, it's just interesting what you said just there about getting them involved, because I also noticed recently, again, having a little bit more time at home, we've been able to do it, is serving things family style. So like, you know, it's all on the table and I don't dish their plates up so much. I do find that Axel will pick like different things that if I put them on his plate, he would probably like not touch or just like, you know, disregard. Whereas if I put it in like little bowls on the table and he can, like, for instance, like fajitas, right? We have fajitas. I'll do like the chicken and the peppers, and then sometimes I'll put mushrooms and different types of cheeses and sauces and whatever. Whereas if I just made that fajita up for him and put all the bits in it, he probably would be like, oh no, I'm not eating that, I don't want peppers. Whereas
he gets to do it himself.
If he does it himself and it's like his choice, he's much more into it than if, like if I just served it to him.
And that's so normal, you know, that what something I really do try and encourage, especially with families who've got a little fussy one, is that kind of family buffet table. And I love it, you know, who doesn't love that style of eating? You know, it's like the Mediterranean style of eating where you just pop everything in the table and you allow people to help themselves. It encourages independence and it takes the pressure off them. So it allows you to sit back, feed yourself. The other kids are feeding themselves, picking up the bits they want. It takes the pressure off. It allows them to explore a little bit more and have a bit more confidence with it. Also, it's encouraging them to, again, be familiar. They're seeing that food in front of them. They're visually seeing it. And, you know, it, rather than you deciding exactly what they're having and just popping it in front of them, you give them some independence. Honestly, it can make such a big difference. And especially, as I say, if you don't then watch and hover and put pressure on them to eat, if you just let them have what they want, you'll find that after doing that a few times, they will start to experiment a lot more. So family-style dinners are brilliant. And it's, sometimes it's like the novelty of it, isn't it?
Yes, and exactly. Yeah,
definitely. And that, and that, you know, that's why I often say in the summer, go out, go and have picnics together, you know, eat together, pour the food in front of everyone and let them explore themselves, because they are discovering their own independence. And actually, you know, by constantly saying to you, like, I can't remember which one of you said that your son often goes, oh, I don't want to eat it, before they've even seen it.
Excellent. You know,
that's just then just pushing the boundaries, just seeing what they can get away with. But if you just ignore that kind of thing and you put the food in front of them and let them help themselves, he will eventually just decide, yeah, okay, I do like that, really. I'm just not going to tell mum I do. I'm just going to hope she doesn't see me eating it, you know?
I do, sometimes I don't. And I'm okay, cool. Well, I'll go, hopefully it's a day today that you do.
So good, Jude.
Just hand them over just hand them the control and say, that's okay, it's up to you. It's your choice. You know, you ultimately decide what you're going to offer and what they eat, but you have to allow them to decide what actually is going to go in their mouth and how much is going to go in their mouth of all of those foods. So I love it. Both these things, going to supermarket, getting them involved, family meals, family independent, these can help families so much. So I love both these ideas. Well done, both of you.
Well, I mean, I'm about to fail again at this hurdle, but how do we feel about letting our children watch television whilst eating their supper in their playroom on their little table?
So,
okay or not?
I got attacked once online for saying that this wasn't okay. You know, again, in the context of everything, if your child's doing it every now and then it's not a problem. Of course it isn't. But if you're finding that you have to get them to watch the TV in order to get them to eat, which does happen a lot, it's really, really common. It's essentially a distraction technique.
Yes.
And first of all, you're using a distraction so that your child isn't actually ever becoming familiar with food or the concept of eating or the reasons why or whether they feel full or hungry. All of their brain is distracted from all of those really important things because they are concentrating on the television and what's on the TV. So you're not actually teaching them about eating or about social environment or about you know, what foods taste like, because none of that's going in. You know, they are literally just focusing on TV. So ideally it's not a good idea to use tools to encourage, even like the aeroplane, open your mouth, here comes an aeroplane. They're not ideal because they are essentially distraction techniques which take away from the concept of food. And we want children to grow up to actually accept and enjoy food for food's sake. if that makes sense.
I've really made a massive fuck up with this one, actually, if I'm honest. And it's happened since lockdown. We've got into this habit because they've got this playroom. I'm hoping that any parent listening to this is going to go, we do this because it make me feel better. But they sit there and they have got a little table and they've got a little, three little chairs, and they just sit in there and it's like their own little space. But I'm finding more and more and more that like Kit won't sit at his chair and he's rolling around on the floor and he hasn't touched his pasta, and I'm like, come on, you need to sit back up. And it's more of a battle. We used to have them sitting up at the breakfast bar, or because it's quite sweet, we've got Little Island and they used to sit there, and now it's like, oh, they want to sit in there and watch telly, and I've just let them. I need to stop it, because it's actually, I do feel bad about it. I don't think it's right. It's not sitting well with me.
Yeah, but it seems really easy at the time, and it's actually quite nice to do it every now and then, isn't it? Just kind of let them have a little TV meal, and again, a little picnic on the floor, whatever works. But I do see that. But if it's happening a lot of the time, it can detract from the food. And as you said, it ends up with you being like, I want you to eat that food. Sit back. Yes. You need to finish that dinner, because they're distracted, so they're not bothering to eat their dinner, because they're not thinking about hunger and fullness and all of the delicious food you've got in front of them. They're thinking about what they're watching. So it can encourage them to become a little bit more fussy.
Sorry, G, do you always do that?
No. We used to, that's what I was literally just going to jump in and say. So in our old house, remember Zoe, we lived in a townhouse, and the kitchen, we had a TV in the kitchen, and Axel used to sit and eat his dinner in there, and he used to watch the TV, right? And he actually ate better. I don't know if it was just an age thing or whatever, but he definitely was a less fussy eater then, when he just sat watching the TV. But as you say, it's probably the distraction, just like shoveling it in.
That's the thing, it's kind of mindless eating, sometimes. Yeah. And again, it doesn't help them to realise, I feel full now, or I'm hungry for more. It's kind of mindless eating. And actually, there's been loads of research on adults and children looking at TV dinners, and I can't remember what the percentage is now, but there is, the research does show that we do eat at quite a substantial amount more when we're eating in front of the dinner, the TV, than if we were just eating dinner without a television on.
Oh, and God, really? Oh, no.
Do you know what's the only reason we don't have the TV on now is because we moved house and don't have a TV in the kitchen.
And it's because we've spoken to Charlotte and she told us no.
I'm not going to put one in now. We were actually going to have one put in, but I don't think we will. I think I'm just going to persevere.
It can encourage overconsumption, and it also can encourage more fussy eating. So, and it just varies. I'm not saying, some parents might have children who eat perfectly with the food, with the TV on, and that's great and that's absolutely fine, but in general it's not normally recommended to do so. And again, I don't want to shame or make any parents feel bad. This is not what this is about, and that is definitely not what I'm about. I know how tough parenting is, but it's just in terms of the long term, often it can be shooting yourself in the foot.
We're gonna change that tonight. I'm gonna send you a photograph, and we're gonna have them up on the island. I'm determined. Charlotte, is there anything else that you kind of want to say, or because we've been chatting, any advice or anything?
Well, I think, one of the things we haven't really touched on, we kind of touched on it a little bit, but one of the things we haven't really touched on is, the role modelling concept, the parents eating foods with their little ones. And it sounds like you both do that, fairly often.
No, but
that,
not
if
me.
If you've got fussy eaters, that can make all the difference in the world. Okay. You sitting and eating with them and letting them see you eating the same food you're trying to encourage them to eat, really, really help, because they actually learn a lot from what to eat, how to eat, from watching and observing. And whether that's siblings or whether that's parents, it can help in the long term to encourage that kind of more of a variety consumed. And especially at weaning, if lots of parents often come to me and say, oh, I've started weaning, but my baby just isn't sure what to do with foods. And the main thing I'll say is, rather than you sitting there feeding them, sit back and feed yourself, because you take the pressure off, you make it more engaging and a more fun environment. Also, they will learn by observing and watching you. So that's the other thing I always try and stress to parents.
Do you know what? It's so funny, because my husband was a really fussy eater, like really, really fussy. He ate about five things until he was about 18. And he's got better, but still now, like the occasional like dish I'll do, he'll be like flicking out the tomatoes and putting them on my plate. And I noticed the other day that Axel was putting his tomatoes to the side of the plate when James was doing it. And I pulled him up on it. I was like, don't do it, because he's copying. So now he like just does it on the sly. When Axel's not looking, he's like flinging the tomato, flinging the tomato onto my plate. But I didn't realise, you know, even at like when they're slightly older, they're still like looking at you like, oh, daddy doesn't eat the tomatoes. Oh, okay, neither will I then.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, so, you know, even just, you know, sittings with the grandparents can change what they do about food. And my you know, we're quite good at sharing food in this house, but my mum would always be like, no, we don't share food. And then Refi would come back from her house and be like, no, not sharing any food, don't touch my food, oh, I'm not eating it, you've touched it now. And I'm like, that's from your grandma. They pick up so easily.
Oh, thank you so much. What a lovely chat. Thank you.
I loved it.
Yeah, Amri, and I feel like you're going to have helped so many people listening to this. And also, if you are listening
really
to this and you're kind of going through any of the anxieties around it, you are not alone. I think we've all been there. And Charlotte and Georgia and I, just for pure venting, but Charlotte for good advice, we're here for you.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Charlotte. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Loved it. Bye. See you guys.
Bye. So good. So many good tips in there.
Yeah, really, really good. I'm definitely going to get my act together now with the breakfast. I'm not going to be cooking like four different breakfasts now. It's like you eat it or you don't. Yeah,
it's interesting. It's really lovely to talk about it, because I think you can get with food, it's so habitual. You know, as adults, right, we know what we like, we know what we don't like, and we know what we like to cook and what we don't generally cook in the house. And you can get into these ruts with feeding your children. I find it really difficult to come up with creative new ways to get different types of food into them. And it even bores me when I'm like, oh, I've only got like 7 meals that I know how to cook.
Yes.
And they get that on rotation and I'm sick of it. They must be sick of it. So it's really interesting to kind of hear different ways and new kind of tips to get them eating different things. And even like, you know, in the supermarket, getting them to identify different types of fruit and veg and things like that. We need to hear it to mix things up.
Definitely. And like different snack ideas as well. Like, I'm okay with the meals. Like, I do try and mix it up a bit. But when it comes to snacks, breakfast, lunches, that kind of thing, yeah, it's always the same stuff. And she has some brilliant ideas. So I will definitely be giving them a go.
That Nutella's got to go. Send it over my way.
I always say, when this jar's finished, that's it, there's no more. And somehow another one always turns up.
Brilliant. Love that. Listen, as always, we would love you to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. And please, if you do have time, to leave us a little review, that would be so lovely, because it just helps us spread the Made by Mamas podcast.
Yeah, and if you do have an Instagram account and you follow us, then please tag us when you're listening to the podcast. We love seeing like who's listening and where you're listening. Sometimes when we're chatting away, it's hard to picture all of you guys. So we love that. And do drop us a message at Made by Mamas or on Zoe's own channel at Zoe Harbin, and we'll see you on Friday.
We'll see you then.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.